Welcome to Accounting Influencers, the podcast for accounting leaders and influencers who want to know exactly what makes the good firms great and the great accountants world class. Let's get today's show started with your host and founder of the BD Academy, Rob Brown.
Welcome to the show, and I'm thrilled to have with me today once more the wonderful legend that is Lee Fredrickson. Good day, sir.
It's a pleasure to be here, Rob.
Lee, always great to have you on our show. You are a friend of the show, and you bring different insights each time. And today we're going to do a deep dive into some research that Hinge have done recently on employer branding. So why don't we just kick off, for the benefit of people that haven't come across you and Hinge before, just give us a little bit on your background and your areas of expertise.
I'm a behavioral psychologist by training, but Hinge is a branding and marketing firm that specializes in the professional services. We're research driven, so we do regular research on the professional services and what makes some firms grow faster and be more profitable and more successful than others.
Why employer branding, Lee? Why did that stand out as a topic that warranted research?
Great question. If you look at what does it take to build a professional services firm, there's really three things you need. One is you need to get the clients, obviously. No clients, no business, no firm. The second thing is you need to have the people, and that's where employer branding comes in. And of course, the third component is you need to have your processes that you use, and those are very important as well. And if you lack any one of those, you're going to be suboptimal in terms of what you can do as a firm. And with the shortages that there have been in a number of professional services industries, with recruiting, that is a ongoing and really a pacing concern for a lot of firms.
It's so true. A lot of the firms I talk to in my role is the Business Development Academy. We train accountants to win business. And you ask them, what is the biggest challenge they have in growing their firm? And they say, we can't get enough of the right people.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the opportunities there, but we can't get enough of the right people to service them. So just to summarize, what are some of the most striking results from the study that you've done?
Well, one of the things goes directly to what you were saying. If you look across industries, accounting is one of the very lowest in terms of the number of people who are actively looking for new positions. And where you really need to focus your effort if you're going to be successful in those that are more passive job seekers, those that aren't actively looking, but they would be interested in talking to someone if there was an offer that would be appropriate. So those are really the focus in these industries that are extremely competitive, and accounting really tops the list.
Yeah.
Now, on the other end, if you were looking for marketing people, they're plentiful. A lot of people actively looking within the professional services, looking for different marketing positions.
And you split your questions into two perspectives, didn't you? You looked at the talent evaluators and the job seekers. Do you just want to make that distinction for us here?
Yeah, we looked at over 1,000 people, and about half of them were job seekers. Those were people who were employed and were either actively, passively looking, or we even talked to some people who were not interested in moving at all. I'm happy where I am, not going to move. And then on the flip side, we looked at those who were involved in the hiring process, people who were responsible for hiring, as well as those that did interviewing and contributing to the overall decisions. They're on the selection teams.
So what exactly are job hunters looking for in professional services?
It does vary by where they are in their career. So for example, in the early part of the career, people are looking for a lot of different experiences. They want to try out new things. As a matter of fact, that that breadth of experience and that ability to try out new things is as important, and in many cases more important than salary,
right?
Just that experience. However, once you start to get to mid-career, you go like, oh my gosh, flip it around. I want to be able to focus. I don't want to be pulled in too many different directions. You learned your lesson.
Yeah, you start to say no to stuff, don't you?
Yeah. I want to be able to say no. I want to be able to have some kind of focus.
Yeah.
And I want to have a company culture that is supportive of me. And then by the time you get to be a senior professional, you're more concerned about who am I actually working with, and are people going to listen to me, and am I going to have the ability to change things, to actually have an impact on this organization?
Yeah.
So you can kind of see the profile of what people are looking for morph as they gain experience.
Yeah, this is generationally led, isn't it? We talk about millennials and Gen X and Gen Z. When you look at professional services, they are run by by people that are over 50, predominantly male, and it's been ever thus, hasn't it? They're not adaptable to change so much, although COVID's hitting them there. But yeah, we do have this wave, this hailstorm of people coming up that do want a voice. They do want some influence. They do want the capacity to change things, and maybe have been frustrated by how the firm's culture has been going so far. And you're saying they value that more than how much they're being paid.
Exactly. The other thing that really came out that was quite surprising, and in previous studies, we found out that the ability to work remotely is important. Right. And it really comes out in this study, obviously, because we collected data just as the COVID was hitting. And there was a big difference in those firms that already had the ability to work remotely or that adapted quickly. They did much, much better in terms of the impact on their employees. And it's not like it's a no fault, no harm kind of thing, because we actually found that those firms that did not adapt well to the COVID situation, that were not flexible, that didn't react quickly, they actually had more people who were actively looking. Basically, I want out of here. This place isn't adapting. They're not adjusting. I need more flexibility. And it was interesting, too, that the ability to work from home was even actually most pronounced in the senior professionals, which we didn't expect. We expected it would be more lower level that they would be. But the senior professionals were really the ones who said, I want to work at home. Now, whether that's driven by additional health concerns or
maybe that commute just wears on them after doing that for 20, 30 years.
Yes.
It's interesting what you're saying. I wrote this book, Build Your Reputation.
It's a darn fine book, I might add.
Thank you, Lee. Appreciate that. I'll pay you later. But it's a career playbook. And I asked the question in there, why should somebody hire you or promote you? And what you need is career capital. In other words, you need that reputation. You need that voice, that influence, that network of champions. You need something to bring to the party. And once you get career capital, you can trade it for autonomy, for flexibility, for remote working, for a three-day week, for a better package, for more interesting work, for better work colleagues. And you start to have a say in things when you have this career capital and a great reputation. So we're talking about employer branding, but there's this employee branding side of it as well, isn't it? And making yourself more promotable and hireable.
It is, Rob. It's all part of the same thing. And when we looked at it, we said, you know, what is most important in having an employer brand? You know, what makes for a good employer brand? What are the elements of a really successful employer brand? And interestingly, on both sides of it, they come up with the same thing. And that is the corporate culture. What is your culture as an organization? The same thing you use to attract clients is what you use to attract employees. That's your core of who you are as a corporation, what your environment is like to work in and what your environment is like to be a client with.
Yeah. Culture is such a strange word too, isn't it? Because some firms think it's the brand values we put on our website or it's what we say we do, but you don't really know a culture till you get wrapped up in it, do you?
Yeah. You just hit on one of my pet peeves, Rob. I don't often go off on many things.
Go off on one, Lee. You have full license to rant.
I'm going to rip into this one. The notion of values, people put a lot of work and a lot of thought into those. But when you end up with a list of 6 or 7 or 8 values, how in the world do you expect anybody to follow that, even if they want to? I mean, the research on human behavior shows, you know, you can keep 3 objectives in your head and maybe 4 if you're super concentrated. Mm. Like, that's about it. But 8 or 10 values, forget it. You might just as well write gibberish there.
Yeah. And how often do the partners of the firm know what those 5 or 6 values are? They might know 2 or 3 of them, let alone live them out.
Yes.
Exactly. So let's talk about the different stages. Candidates early in the career, we've established are looking for different things later in the career. Do you want to just expand on the priorities and deciding factors are for candidates at different stages in their career?
Yeah, it really is interesting. And one of the ways of thinking about it is your priority tends to be what you don't have.
Okay.
So when you look at what people who are actively looking at almost any part of their career, the thing they're looking for is usually a better culture, better cultural fit, something where they will get the responsibility they need or the autonomy So they're looking for a better culture. And wages are secondary. When you move to those people who are not as actively looking, where they're more satisfied with the culture they have, actually, they assume they're going to move to a place that has a good culture because they're not going to move unless they get a reasonable culture.
That's interesting.
And for them, the thing that actually moves them is the dollars.
Right.
So you end up with a different priority depending on where you are, you know, where you are not only in your career, but where you are in terms of your dissatisfaction level with the place you're working at.
Yeah, that's very good. And presumably then that has implications for the people in the firms recruiting these people at different stages in their career.
It does. And it also has implications for turnover. What we find are that turnover in a position is not uniform. And what we find there is that there's a peak of that around 2 to 3 years after employment. So when you've been there a couple years, it sort of sinks in for you that this is not the place for me, or I've got what I can get out of this place. Mm. So that's a prime time for people leaving. Other prime times are when you mess up something with the culture. The response to COVID, for example, as we alluded to earlier, a big increase. All of a sudden, people said, you know, this place isn't for me. Now, whether they're able to find a position or not, that's a different thing, but they have already loosened that bond that kept them where they are.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And in your research, you look at the different stages as entry level and mid-career and leadership, senior professional. But are you finding on the whole that loyalty is going down? People are more open to moving. They are less wedded to a firm. Do you remember those jobs for life that we used to have? You sign up forever. Yes. But these days, there's a lot of fluidity, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. And if I had to characterize it, I would say there's more people thinking of gigs rather than jobs, okay, rather than careers. It's something you're doing for a period of time. Now, having said that, though, there are still people who have a great deal of loyalty to the firm they have. And that seems to increase over time. Not surprising, when you've been in a place a long time, you tend to be. So there's kind of a hump. If you can once get over that hump with people and they've really settled in, they're pretty stable. Unless, yeah, you know, we mentioned COVID, the other thing that really impacts it is mergers.
Right. Yeah, of course. Yeah, yeah, you merge, say, Coca-Cola with Panda Pops, and they're very different cultures, aren't they? And
Yes, exactly. And it's interesting. If the merger is one where a firm acquires another firm, the people in the firm that is doing the acquiring, they're perfectly happy. Yeah. They're not threatened. They're not. But the firm that is acquired, or the one when a merger of equals, you see a big spike in people actively looking and a real decrease in those that say they're not looking at all.
Yeah.
So you lose stability in your workforce.
And I saw some research by the Gallup organization that came up with a book called Vital Friends. And they said one of the key factors in enjoying your role, apart from worthwhile work, is being around people that you like, that are friends for you. So with disruption, mm-hmm, with people moving on, that affects your state of mind, doesn't it? And how happy you are career-wise.
It does indeed. And you can see it as you look in firms. If you have a good friend in there, they tend to help each other, look out for each other's, yeah, got your back. And they're a way of accumulating that career capital you mentioned earlier. That's part of your network.
Now, when we look at talent, firms would say recruitment and retention of top talent is a key priority for us. They have all kinds of golden handshake, welcome packages, promising them the earth. But it's at the other end as well. You've got this term golden handcuffs that you've looked into. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, once you get in a situation where it's difficult to leave, you can get people who are resentful of where they are, and they're resentful of what they're saying, but they're staying around because of a financial thing or because of a retirement. And what that does is just saps the productivity. It saps the engagement and involvement, which hurts the firm as a whole.
Yeah. Corporate branding is different to personal branding. This personal branding side of it, building your own career capital, attracting people to you so you're employable. But the other side of it is this corporate branding. How do firms set themselves up as an employee of choice? You help firms with the corporate branding side of things. How do you begin that journey, Lee? And what kind of things do you talk about there?
Well, the first is understanding so you have policies that allow you to be a good place to work.
Okay.
For example, the working remotely. Having a policy where you are against working remotely can be very detrimental, and you don't necessarily necessarily realize that's what's going on. And the interesting thing is people will tell you. I mean, when we do branding work and we ask the internal people about the brand, they'll tell you, you know, how satisfied they are and what they're dissatisfied and which policies and so forth. So it's not like it's not accessible or it's unknowable. Any competently performed survey or piece of research can uncover what those things are, but you have to have the will to change them.
Yeah.
The second thing you need to do is you need to be able to communicate that culture and that brand. And that often is where people fall down, just like as you need to differentiate your client-facing brand, how you're different from other firms. You also have to differentiate your employer brand. Mm. How are you different than other employers, other accounting firms?
Yeah.
Do you have policies that are consistent? And, you know, if you're hiring, you know, you're focusing on hiring entry-level people, there's no excuse for not knowing what it is that they're looking for and what values are important to them.
You bring up an excellent point because your external brand will make one business client move from one accounting firm to another, but your employee brand will make one top talent person move from one firm to another because they perceive a gap, don't they? There's something better. There's something I haven't got. There's a need that's not being met.
Yes. And it's either going to be around their autonomy and their ability to build things or one of the benefits, whether it's salary or flexibility or working from home. It's going to be something like that.
And in professional firms, Lee, are there some that are so big and unwieldy, if you like, that they're a little bit blind to this internal employer branding? They think we've got such a strong external brand, people will just want to come and work for us.
Well, to assert certain extent, they are right. A strong external brand will attract people to work for you. What it won't do is keep them loyal, and it will become a training academy for other firms.
Yeah. So you've looked at different professional service sectors. There are many of them. We're talking about accountants here, but presumably attracting and retaining talent in different industries, is it all pretty similar, or are there any differences?
There are actually some pretty stark differences in terms of where they are in terms of the supply and demand. So for example, construction, very high level of active looking in the construction industry.
Okay.
Because if you think about it, construction industry is sort of oriented that way, about big projects that last a time, and then you may go to another place that lasts a time. Similarly, branding, marketing, and communications is an area where there's quite a bit of turnover in the professional services. So you have those kinds of anomalies. Accounting is really an anomaly. It has a very, very low rate of active looking people. So most of them, they're either satisfied where they are or they're passively looking.
I'm interested in the term passively looking, because if I think of some accountants that I know, looking is hard because by showing the world that you are unhappy where you are, you're jeopardizing your current position. So
Precisely. You've
almost got to do it under the radar, haven't you? You wouldn't put on LinkedIn actively looking for new opportunities. You've got to be very careful who you talk about that to, haven't you?
Precisely. And so you know where they go? Those mid-career people who are passively looking?
Go on.
Trade shows.
Oh, yeah, true.
Associations, your professional community, other people, that's where they go.
Yeah.
They can talk to their friends discreetly.
Yeah.
Or they wait for someone to contact them through LinkedIn.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Talk to us about time horizons, Lee, for job seekers.
Well, there's time horizons in terms of when it's most likely that someone is going to be looking for something new. Where in your engagement with an organization are you most likely? Now, it takes 6 months before you really understand who a person is or what a job is. Then you sort of understand, okay, this is the organization I really joined, not the one I thought I was joining.
Yeah. It either is or it isn't what you bought into.
Yes. The first few weeks, it's a honeymoon. Everything is wonderful and lovely. And then it's like, oh my gosh, there are all these things I didn't realize I should have asked about.
All the politics nobody told me about.
Yes, yes. And then it takes you a while to make the decision. So that's usually where the 1 to 2 years is usually pretty safe for an employer point of view. But then after that, that's when people really start looking. The other thing we see is when there's a big transition. We mentioned COVID, we mentioned mergers and acquisitions. Whenever there's a change in your work environment, environment that's significant. That also seems to really engender a bunch of people looking like, this place has changed. I liked it the way it was. I don't like it the way it's going.
Yeah, that's a really important point, because we are squarely in the middle of a pandemic right now. People have been furloughed. They're working from home. They might not want to go back and have that commute. Some might be desperate to get back to an office because they're struggling with their home situation. But mm-hmm. it's change. It's upheaval. It's disruption. It makes people think and reflect. Am I really going where I want to go in life? And all the mergers and acquisitions, the stuff you're talking about, accountants and professionals, they don't deal well with this kind of change. They want certainty, don't they? And that's the last thing they've got right now.
Right, exactly. There's a reason they went into accounting and not new product development.
It must be hard for an accounting firm to keep people loyal. They're going to lose people.
Yes, they're going to lose people. And I think there's going to be big changes in terms of the business model. I would characterize accounting as being primarily a local profession in its orientation. If you want to have business in a certain area, you need to open an office in that city and you need to have people in that city. And it's all eyeball to eyeball. That's the only way you get business. That's the only way you can deliver your services. Well, the industry has demonstrated to itself that that's a bunch of baloney.
Yeah.
There are many different models and there are many different ways you deliver service. And it's quite possible, as we've shown, to do many things remotely that were previously done in the office.
It's a really good point. And we're getting an explosion in outsourcing, offshoring, freelancing, these career portfolios. I'm going to do this project and then opt out. So we're going to have a disruptive labor market, aren't we?
I think we are. And depending on your view of things, that creates tremendous opportunity as people rethink their entire business models and it disrupts industries.
Mm. Is there anything employers can do, Lee, to attract people that are not actively looking to move?
Yes, they can. And the things that attract passive job seekers are almost the very same things that attract clients.
Okay.
They're very interested in your website, the kinds of thought leadership you publish, what you specialize in, what industries you know. And what you're going to do is you're going to look online, you're going to talk to your friends at trade shows, virtual or otherwise, and you're going to figure out, where can I really advance my career? Yeah. Where can I do the kinds of work I want to do in the way I want to do it?
Yeah. So in wrapping up, Lee, what advice would you give to accounting firm leaders, and it may be even the HR function in there, but they're responsible for talent recruitment and retention. What advice would you give to them to stay the employers of choice and put talent at the top of the agenda right now?
I would say it starts with understanding, what is it that you want to be known for? What are the expertise points? What kinds of problems do you want to be able to solve? And once you understand that, then you have a much better understanding of what type of people you will need to be able to solve those kinds of problems and what kind of clients have those kinds of problems.
Yeah.
And when you understand those two things, and if you align those and you demonstrate your expertise through the things you write and talk about and share in the digital world, that helps you attract both the right kind of people and the right kind of clients. And so keeping your culture one that is really focused on that kind of work, that kind of expertise, will attract the very best people. And then give them the flexibility that they want and need to do their best work.
Sure. The big four firms, they're coming out of big offices with huge rents. They're not going to fill those up again. They're going to be laying off hundreds and thousands of people. Mm-hmm. So the job market is going to be flooded with quality people. But in order to pick the cream of that crop, that employee brand proposition needs to be strong, doesn't it?
It does indeed. And the employer, the employee, and the firm as a whole, those brands, they all need to be strong. They all need to be aligned and recognizing the importance of brand, whether it's as an employer or as an individual. I think we're just on the front edge of that.
The research that Hinge does, the stuff that you guys churn out, is phenomenally high quality. If people want to know more about what you're doing, get interested in this corporate employer branding stuff that you're doing, what's a good way for them to reach out, Lee?
I would go just to Hinge Marketing. marketing.com, our website, and look in the library. You'll see a section of research reports, and this one is right there. All our executive summaries are free in there, so there's no cost or obligation, and we don't cold call, so no one's going to be reaching out to you and pounding on your head to talk to you.
Yeah, got that. Thank you very much. And even the executive summaries are super informative and very, very insightful. So this has been terrific today. Just finish, would you, with some words of advice or inspiration for the accountants themselves listening? They want to have that career capital. They want to be working for the best accounting firms. What would you say to them?
I would say number one is specialize. Start with something that you love and that you can devote yourself to getting better and better at it. I think we are entering an age of specialists, and we will see more and more of that as the geographic barriers come through. So that's number one. Number two is make that visible to the world. Share it, whether it's through blog posts or speaking or online or even just sharing things that you find helpful and inspirational. Helpfulness pays. That's what people are looking for. People who are helpful and have expertise that's useful.
Yeah. The other thing I would add to that, Lee, is build your network, because that personal board of advisors that can open doors and usher you into the corridors of power and into boardrooms, those champions, those advocates, you don't get anywhere on your own. So having people be in that gap for you, that's why they say it's not always what you know, it's who you know. That's part of it, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is, Rob. And that's one of the things that our more recent research we're doing, one of the things we're finding the power of that, because it not only helps you with getting opportunities and so forth, it also helps you sharpen your skills, being with other experts. You know, you're judged by who you know and who you hang out with.
Yeah, just to finish, I say in my book, your network is who you know, and your reputation is who knows you. And each one builds the other one. And so, yeah, you've got to invest in yourself. Lee Fredrickson, this has been terrific today. Thank you so much for your time and your insights. And I look forward to the next time we have you on the show, where I'm sure we're going to have another amazing topic to talk about. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure, Rob. Thank you very much.
You've been listening to Accounting Influencers, the podcast for accounting leaders and influencers who want to know exactly what makes the good firms great and the great accountants world-class. For show notes on today's and other episodes, plus some great blogs and resources to help accountants lead, sell, and perform at the highest levels, go to bdacademy.pro. Until next time, have a fantastic day.